figured there'll be cash and dust food.
I with the meeting. Before us, of course, we have the National Railway Safety Regulator Amendment Bill, B32B of 2008. And of course, present here from the department, led by Dr. Maria Kuwa. Mr. Masombuga, who is quite familiar with us, I guess Ms. Ketabi Lemabe, it will be you. And then Marvin Panzera. Okay, David Dion, we know. of course, from KwaZulu Natal, once more, we take the pleasure. It's one province that is quite consistent in sending special delegates to participate in legislative processes in the National Council of Provinces. And we appreciate that very much. We have Inkosi Mthuli and Kobetsing. We thank you very much for being part of the meeting. For those, of course, who do not know me, because I was told that Dr. Kurz has just started in the department last week. I am Rasiriti Papitao, representing the Northern Cape in the National Council of Provinces. In the committee, we have Reverend Moatis, Northwest, entering the Honorable Mzizi from Gauteng. Honorable Watson from Pumalanga. I don't know. By the way, what is Kamala Guban? What is Kamala Guban? Freddy Adams from the Western Cape and the Honorable Peter Tulare from the Eastern Cape. You would know, Doctor, that the National Council of Provinces is the representative, of course, of provinces. So our committee structures also operate in that fashion, where we'll be representing the interests of our province in whatever way, whether it be policy development or whatsoever. So I take it that you are going to lead us with the presentation. Therefore, I give you the opportunity. You can take us through the presentation. I forgot a very honored special delegate from Transnet, who's with us following processes very closely. And because of you had an opportunity to engage with me, can you just allow members to hear your voice?
Thank you very much, Shepherd. I'm Sue Land and I'm representing Transnet. Thank you very much.
I'm doing that because I don't want to be asked tomorrow, but who was that? And so forth. Thank you very much. You are welcome.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. It's a privilege to be here on behalf of myself and Aspid Mazambuka, also joined by the representative from the RSR, the general manager, and also the safety advisor from the safety regulator. For us as a team, this particular effort came quite a long way. And quite a number of amendments were made through the consultation process, and it's for...
I was asking what section it says. You know, it will help our mindset to know that it's a 75 or a 76 we have to embrace the provinces, etc. So that we put our gears the correct way.
Chairperson, this bill will be dealt with in accordance with the procedure established by Section 76 of the Constitution, since it falls within a functional area listed in Schedule 4 of the Constitution, namely public transport. Thank you.
That is why I was so patient to allow at least many provinces to be present before we kick off. It is the 76 years. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. We will be dealing with the National Railway Safety Regulator Amendment Bill. We have the first slide there indicating BU32B 2008 being the reference number for this particular bill. We've presented to the Portfolio Committee on Transport. As you all know, we've presented to the National Assembly, and the concurrence of the National Council of Provinces will be seeked today. For purposes of just providing a little bit of background, we have the existing Act called the Principal Act of the National Railway Safety Regulator. That particular Act basically established this entity as a regulator within the railway safety arena. As principal functional area, the regulator will be responsible and is presently already responsible for oversight of safety in the railway operational sector and to promote rail as an efficient mode of transport. I would like to emphasize the fact that it promotes rail as an efficient mode of transport. Presently, one of the changes will be to promote rail as a result of the regulatory areas and functions of the regulator. We had some particular developments in various fields in the last couple of years, in particularly the governance oversight functional area, financial compliance arena, management operations, and the need came about to basically revisit the Act to look at the capacity within the RSR to basically empower this entity. There are various objects of the bill. If we look at the bill as presented, we have a very lengthy paragraph on the objectives. Chairperson, I will briefly go through the objects, but maybe it will be also sensible to go into a little bit of discussion even now, if necessary, just to embroider on these objectives, because the second phase in the slideshow will be taking the bulk clause by clause, that every clause will relate to one of the objectives. So I don't want to duplicate. Firstly, the definitions. I will look at the definitions in particular. That the ambit of a threat to safety to include behavior, I would like to just explain that to the committee, and that is presently we can act if there is a threat because of a particular operational activity, because of a particular structural situation. We do not yet have a behavior that can lead to a safety risk. So this will actually include that particular right for the RSR to also act whenever there's behavior that may lead to a safety risk for us. We would like to empower the minister to look at the particular railway sectors to include that into the bill, and particularly then the monorail systems, trams, systems running on pneumatic tires, and those matters are not presently within the ambit of the Act. In other words, they are not seen as a railway. So we have our experts here that can maybe explain those particular systems if necessary. Then, of course, while the Minister define and nominate the railways, we will have the regulator to basically exempt, if necessary, certain railways from the ambit of the Act. The following objective of the bill: to clarify that operators remain responsible for railway safety. Very important, this is actually an addition to the Act, not a revision. It will be, as within any management sphere, the responsibility to take accountability for your safety as an operator cannot be taken over by the railway safety regulator. And in the past, confusion existed on that particular responsibility area. So while the railway safety regulator will still have the right to conduct inspections, to require reports, to do an investigation. The responsibility to have a safe operating system and process and structure will be that of the operator. It will clarify that the regulator is responsible for the promotion of railway safety, not only to promote railway as the first means of transport necessarily. That may be the result, as we are trying to achieve, but we would like to promote railway safety also through the regulator. We would like to empower the regulator to enter into informal arrangements with rail players. Presently we have a formal agreement that must be concluded, and the necessity arose in the past that we also need to have informal arrangements to enhance cooperation and collaboration with rail players. We would like to clarify the role of the operator associations. You will remember that presently the Act provides for basically the mandating of operator associations to even act on behalf of the RSR to set standards. What we would like to do is to have the responsibility within the regulator, but to have the cooperation of the operator associations whenever necessary in the development of standards. To clarify the role of the regulator in relation to transportation of dangerous goods by rail, we would like to be able to inspect even prior to placement of goods onto the rail and the whole railway process, so that we could detect and also limit safety risks with regard to transportation of dangerous goods. On the governance side, certain of the provisions regarding the terms and conditions of service of the CEO have been revisited. Then we all know the PSMA requirement that the annual report must be submitted within 5 months. Presently it's a 3 month period allowed for the RSR, and we just would like to bring it in line. To provide that the board approves the conditions of the service of staff members, presently we have a lengthy process going through the Minister of Finance eventually, so we would like to streamline that process as well. Then to empower the CEO to delegate his or her powers and duties to some extent an inherent function, but because of the precedent set in other pieces of legislation that it is particularly stipulated, we are also doing this for the RSR. To extend the regulator's funds to include penalties and fees for providing services and other prescribed sources. Presently we have a very limited income for the regulator, and we are also adding to the functional area, so we need to look at the capacity of the regulator. We have the government allocation, as we all know, and when we look at the penalties and the fees, we are going to embroider on how the penalties will come about and how the fees will then lead to an additional source of income. We will provide that the regulator may charge fees for administering safety permits, where presently we are only looking at how you apply for the safety permit. So not only the application fee, but also the administration fee should lead to a charge by the regulator. To clarify the types of permits in connection with which standards may be imposed, we have one safety permit presently, but we have different types of operators. We have different kinds of permits that must be regulated. So we need to have that particular distinction and also link the fees accordingly. Then on the regulatory side, we would like to empower the minister to adopt and accept existing standards as well as to develop new ones. We have a very narrow focus presently looking at the SABS standards. We can still utilize those standards, and I don't think there's necessarily a problem, but we would also like to make sure that whenever any standards change with regard to the SABS, that we could have our own standards already regulated and that we can add and accept existing standards as need be. Then in the appointment of inspectors, we would like to empower the CEO, because that is part of the operational focus area of the RSR and also part of the operational activities within the entity. The inspectors themselves, more specific functions linked to their area of responsibilities, the audit, the inspection, the investigation, particularly linked to the dangerous goods, as I've mentioned before, prior to their transportation by rail. To provide that operators investigate railway occurrences and to empower the regulator to take steps if they fail to do so. Again, linking with the responsibility of the operators to actually investigate. In other words, while presently we have the board to take care of these investigations, if instructed by the minister, we now say the regulator has that responsibility to investigate, whether by instruction of the minister or otherwise. But that doesn't take away the responsibility of the operators to investigate a railway occurrence within their own activities. Then to empower the board to subpoena witnesses and documents, obtain documents in connection with investigations, part of the process of investigation, and then to enable the minister to make regulations for the payment of penalties by operators who default. Now those penalties will also link up with that responsibility to keep to the safety standards, firstly, to keep to the safety instructions issued by the regulator, and in particular then the investigations that must be done if an occurrence occur. To provide for matters connected therewith, just to finish it off. Chairperson, then with the permission of the committee, I will just particularly go to the clauses itself. We have a broad overview. You will see that we are touching on the governance issues. We are talking about the financial income of the RSR and the capacity of the CEO within the entity. When we look at the definitions, quite a lot of them, dangerous goods, we removed specific reference to that SABS 0228, the one that I've mentioned, and then we are going to be able to confirm in our regulations which standards we as the Department of Transport, RSR and the Minister would like to comply with. The definition of integrity has been inserted in the definitions and shall mean a condition in which individual components of a system and the total system are unified, consistent and are fit for the purpose. Long definition basically saying that the RSR is responsibility for the integrity of the system, to ensure that the integrity of the system is safe. For purposes of that, we need to define what do we mean by integrity. So we are talking about the whole system, but we are also talking about the individual components making up the system. If we go to the definition of a network operator, two very important definitions we have. Firstly, the network operator on the one hand, on the other hand, the train operator. Now, some confusion exists presently, so we just clarify the definition a little bit. The network operator, specifically looking at the responsibilities as a whole, the integration of all the railways under that particular network, and also the signals along the rail and so forth. When we look at the train operator, we are going to focus primarily on the transportation of the passengers and freight and goods. So that is also why we are now taking away the particular authorization and direction of train movement. So that whole train movement exercise will go as a responsibility of the network operator and not anymore the train operator. Threat to safety, that is the one that we've mentioned. If there's a threat to safety, we in the past or the existing act, we talked about a hazard or condition. So we are talking now about a hazardous condition and addition of the word or behavior. Now the behavior is linking up again to, we are not only talking about the condition, but people that can actually act in such a manner that it will be a threat to safety, and we want to intervene as soon as possible. Definition of station, actually not that difficult. We are limiting it to the place where passengers leave or board trains, so we do not want to have any unclarity. We include rather model exchange and commercial and retail premises, but we need to make sure that we are not going to confuse that with any flight movements as well. Definition of train operator is amended to exclude the responsibility to control movement of rolling stock, which is the responsibility of the network operator. Again, just clarity between the two definitions. Clause 2, main section 3, this is where we are going to empower the minister to declare a rail system when we are having the following. Firstly, a track gauge of less than 600 millimeters as a railway. The third one there, we are also going to empower the minister to define a railway when he would like to define a monorail, trains and fixed rails or track systems running on pneumatic tires. And we can maybe have an explanation on what a pneumatic tire is, if that is necessary. The exemption, again, will be done by the regulator itself. Clause 3 of the Amendment Act, meaning Section 5, just a substitution paragraph, basically emphasizing the responsibility again of the operators to take care of railway transport safety. Clause 4, this amendment empowers the regulator to conclude cooperative agreements. As you've seen, we have the formal agreements presently, and because this particular section actually requires that all organs of state should work together and organize themselves to cooperate, and we must ensure that they have the capability to utilize any form of cooperation, whether that be formal or informal, to achieve the objectives. Clause 5, another substitution paragraph, the duty on the regulator to oversee safety in relation to transportation of dangerous goods by rail, and then the three methods, conducting of an audit, doing an inspection, and also the general kind of investigation. We would like to provide that a recognized operator organization the opportunity to collaborate with the regulator, but not necessarily to take over the duty of developing the standards. Subsection 2, amended by substitution paragraph N, quite simple as well, just the duty of the RSR to oversee the occupational health and safety matters that impact or have potential impact on the safety of railway operations. Apparently, if you look closely at the existing Act, the RSR is to have a database, collect information, but that is not the same as to oversee all the occupational health and safety matters, and we would like to emphasize the oversight function, not so much the database. Clause 6, amend Section 9, providing that the Minister of Finance will no longer play a role in determining the terms and conditions of the CEO, where we are giving that responsibility more on the operational and governance sphere and in line with the existing procedure within other entities. The amendment also provides that the regulator should submit the annual report within 5 months, again as emphasized at the beginning, to be in line with the PFMA. The empowerment of the CEO to appoint the staff of the regulator, also a lengthy process presently, and we are not only talking about the safety inspectors, but we are also talking about the whole administrative component of the regulator. Approval of terms and conditions of service of the staff by the board, also in line with general governance principles. Clause 8, providing the CEO the opportunity to delegate his or her functions, also a very general kind of principle, and that was accidentally omitted from the Principal Act. When we look at Clause 9, we are basically providing for a regulator's fee. Now, this regulator's fee will include the penalties payable in terms of the regulations, and also fees for services relating to providing training and advice. That is an addition, basically. Presently, we do not have the opportunity to ask fees for services for training and advice. This is an additional functional area for the RSR and the opportunity to generate funding. Other sources may be determined by the minister, but that will also be gazetted. Well, I think one is omitted there, and that is also the opportunity to get donor funding with the permission of the board in consultation with the minister. So I think that can just also be noted. Clause 10, this amendment will delete A and insert an applicable. What are we talking about? We are talking about the requiring of particular funding, isn't it? That's good, Ms. Mbuka. Chairperson, we are talking about the eligibility of the railway operator. So, who may undertake railway operations? So, when we are going to define this eligibility, we would like to be very specific. You must be in the possession of an applicable safety permit, not just a safety permit, because they're going to distinguish between the types of safety permits and the categories. We find it suitable to include the word applicable permit. The empowerment of the minister to annually determine the fees that the regulator must charge for safety permits. Also a very important addition. Presently we are having the situation that the board just charge fees. So that will also create a confusion if we are not going to have a set standard and a set determination. And we elevated this particular function to the minister to determine those fees annually, and the regulator will charge accordingly. The amendment further clarifies that fees may differ from various operators, and applications for safety permits should be accompanied by non-refundable application fee. We are seeing every time the classification and the determination of the permits and the fees in accordance with that new allocation. Clause 12 makes it clear that standard conditions applicable to safety permits do not have to be categorized according to the categories mentioned, but that they may differ according to the type of permit. Okay, what that basically says is that we have these different categories. You are a train operator, or you're a network operator. So the conditions will not only be relating to that particular category of yours, but also it will be set according to the type of permit that you will be issuing. So just clarifying and technical issue. Clause 13 amends section 28 by empowering the regulator to determine the form and content, manner of submission, circumstances under which the safety management system or report may be required by the regulator. Okay, so firstly, there are three functions there. The first one is that the regulator takes responsibility of introducing the safety management system that must be in place with each operator. They determine the standards, the form, everything regarding that safety management system. Point one. Point two, they must ensure that the operators actually comply. So that is the more oversight function that they have. And then they must also be able to investigate and provide or request reports on that particular safety management system by the different operators. Clause 14 amends section 29 to empower the minister to make regulations. Now that particular clause is then linking the regulations to adoption of the existing standards and to develop new standards, also linking back to our definition of standards, which we are now going to make more enforceable. Clause 15, this amendment only adds the words or operation after the words proposed construction. Okay, so what we are saying there is that the minister has the responsibility to make regulations on various issues. The first one will be the design, construction, operation, and alteration. So what we did when we actually finalized the particular section, we omitted the word operation. We only emphasized the design, construction, and alteration. So this is also a little bit of a typographical correction in the Act. Clause 16, amending Section 32 to empower the CEO rather than the minister to appoint the railway safety inspectors. This is core function, of course, but also because of the necessity to preempt any dangerous behavior and goods, we need to have a more smooth process of appointment. Appointment will be either ad hoc, permanent, or on a contract basis. Clause 17, empowering the railway safety inspectors to investigate, audit, inspect an occurrence, non-compliance, or an activity that may disturb the safe transportation of dangerous goods. We are basically adding specific powers to the safety inspectors, being the core safety net of the RSR. Amendment of Section 38 by Clause 18 to provide that operators must conduct investigation regarding railway occurrence. We've mentioned that before as well. The RSR will assume that the operators will conduct these investigations because the Act will now basically require that. They will also be in the position to instruct that such an investigation must be done. They will be in the position to obtain reports on that investigation. Further, they will also be in the position to request further reports and to investigate the matter on their own initiative. So this is basically a comprehensive empowerment to do a proper investigation. Clause 19, amending Section 40, empowering the regulator to request information from persons for any related activity. Now, this is not only for purposes of inspection. This is whenever any safety information will be necessary. Clause 20, amending Section 44, reducing the time frame for lodging a notice of intention to appeal from 60 days to 21. We have two different periods there. In the existing Act, we basically have the intention to appeal within the 60-day period. Now we are saying the intention to appeal within 21 days, and then after the 21 days, you still have 30 days to lodge the appeal itself, putting in comprehensively the grounds for your appeal. And the appeal will, of course, go to the minister, and in particular instances to the board, depending the case. Clause 21, amending Section 45, we have a total new paragraph there. And we are talking about the penalty regulations now. A whole paragraph, Chairperson, basically imposing penalties for the purposes of non-compliance with this Act. This is quite comprehensive. We are talking contents, we are talking process, we are talking about non-compliance with instructions, all these new activities and responsibilities, mandating the RSR to act in, to the benefit of their safety in the railway sector. We need to impose penalties. This will also be an additional income to the RSR, because if the RSR impose those penalties, operators that fail to comply with the standards will be actually be responsible for direct payments to the RSR. Chairperson, the Act will be called the National Railway Safety Regulator Amendment Act. We are in the process of finalizing the regulations, and the Act itself will come into operation by proclamation by the President. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Members, there we are. That was the presentation. Are there any questions, issues for engagement? Honorable Watson, and then Mzizi.
Chair, thank you. I think the way Dr. Goetz, I thought I said the way the Dr. Goetz did the presentation was actually quite clear to me on how the bill is to be amended. But I must admit that I don't know what this Chocha is that we're talking about. You know, if you tell me about the police, I know there's police stations all over the country. If you tell me about the railway police, I know where to find them. I don't know where this National Railway Regulator is. Is it a body that's part of transport? Is it, where is it? And how does it impact on the provinces? Where will I find this organization in Mpumalanga? And exactly, you know, I didn't study the original act, so I'm probably guilty because I could have done that if I wanted to. But, you know, we are a bit full of both coming in this side and going out that side. And I'd appreciate just an explanation on what exactly is this thing that we're talking about, the National Railway Safety Regulator. Where has it been all the time? From where does it function? And as I said, where will I find it in Mpumalanga? If I have to now go and do the briefing in my province, they'll say, oh, you don't need it. And then I won't know.
Hello, Mrs.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think I do follow what is this regulator means, because it seems as if now if you go to housing, we have got also this housing regulator, which seems as if there's a body that has been now established to look after the interests of whatever particular object that the government has in mind. But now it is actually what Mr. Watson is saying, that if the regulator is there, what are we going to do with the railway police? Because over and above, we do have a CEO who is also regulating. Now, beyond, there would be now a board which will be now issuing permits. Vis-a-vis, now we have the transportation board, which I think the transportation would include everything. That should be the board that is what's named. What would be their function? Are they not encroaching now into, are we not having a sort of a mushrooming of sort of a lot of association that would be regulating one thing? I also on the other problem I have is on page 4. They did clarify the regulator's relation to the transportation and dangerous goods. Now, dangerous goods in the railway, what would be? Because that's a single place. I can understand in the what's name on the road where you have hazardous stuff that may be transported on the road. But on the railway, what do we mean by that? If that can be clarified. The other problem also, which I would like to have a clarity on page 5, where this regulator is required to report and submit within 5 months after a financial year. And I may also couple with that more. The report that it submits it to the minister. But if you look at right down, it says the CEO is the one that appoints the staff of the regulator and many other. It seems as if that is the person who would be looking at progress report from the regulator, that those reports should be submitted to that person, either than to go to the minister, because the minister will be dealing with the CEO. Or the CEO now is now another body that is there, and the regulator is there, both of them talking to the minister. I think I did touch on the what's name, on permit, that the regulator is the one that is issuing permits. Now, I have also spoken about the transportation board. Furthermore, down the lines, let's now go to where we deal now on page 12. She made mention of pneumatic tires. I did not actually understand whether we now mean these road transport, which with so many tires, up to 20, 24 tires, if we talk about that, well, what do we talk about? I want to understand the pneumatic tires. I'm just trying to I did also touch on the what's name CEO. I think that one, I'll leave it because I did speak of it.
And then it also, you find it on page 16, page 17, it still speaks of strengthening the Muslim, the CEO. But I fail to understand why should they now submit their reports to Jefferson. On page 21, I don't know what you probably, the amendment further clarifies that the fee may differ from various operations and applications for safety permits. Now, why do we put that accompanied by non-refundable application if there's so various fee? Anything may have happened, an error may have happened. Now, should I now forfeit the fees because of an error of a type, what do you call it now, this type, an error that has been created by typist or of some kind? Should I now forfeit really my fees or no, on account of that? Coming now to the last one, sir. I also see that the bills also will require that an application, if you lodge an appeal, it should be within 21 days. The problem I have, these laws in the past, they would say within 21 days. You may find that it includes weekends, it includes holidays. Now, why is it not specifying here that within 21 working days? Then one would understand that it is working days, but if it is left open as it is, it may go beyond. Thank you, sir.
Okay, well, this is Ref. What Honorable Watson was saying, what is this hoha, you know, there are a lot of things here. I put myself in a position when the portfolio committee, the proverb will ask me questions on this. A lot of things are very much unclear to my mind. Doctor, I learned 2 weeks there, you know, probably we thinking that the department members know the trend which we follow. Moreover, when it's a Section 76 bill, when we are going to brief the provinces, the style that they follow, so that really it puts us in a better position to be able to brief the provinces. But nevertheless, I don't know, maybe it might be clear for other members, but for me it will be difficult when questions come and you struggle to answer some of the questions. Let me try to ask you, you know, the threat and the risk. If that could be explained, what are the threats and what are the risks? Then you have regulator, you have operator associations, then you have different types of regulators, which means there are different types of regulators. I'm taking this from your saying. Then you have investigate railway occurrences. What is that? Then you have network operators. The operators are so many. What is the network operator? How many operators and how are they differing from one another? They are really many. If one could understand that. You know, I was loving to myself because the railway things were withdrawn in the rural areas
I said to myself, what is this RSR? You know, I've loved some children. I know what is it, but I have forgotten what is RSR. You know, in the olden days when there were trains in the rural areas, we used to know what that was. Oh, Railway Safety Regulator, okay. And you have types of permits. Is it the one permit? How many permits are there? These are the few questions, maybe as you will be answering all the questions like Honorable Mziz has asked, it will clarify me to put me in a better position to be able to present the program. Thank you.
In the absence of Nan and Doc.
Okay, thank you very much. Now, I think the guys from the Rover Factor Regulator will touch on the detail. But just to briefly outline, for purposes of clarity on what this entity is, we are dealing with a Section 3A entity. We are talking about an entity that is not within the Department of Transport, but is a legal entity reporting through its board to the Minister of Transport directly. So the responsibility is that of a national on safety within the rail sector. In other words, we are not talking about policing of any other issue except on the safety standards and the implementation of these safety conditions that we impose for purposes of compliance to those safety standards by the network operators. We need to consider the penalties to be imposed. The network operators like the SARCC and Transnet and the others will be explained by the Railway Safety Regulator. But within the provinces, we need to think, well, are we going to establish a railway network? Are we going to establish a particular train operator? So if we are going to go in that direction, yes, then there are certain safety standards that must be met, then there are certain safety permits that must be obtained, but the Railway Safety Regulator will not necessarily engage with the public at large. It will engage with your operators, the network operators, or the train operators, or the associations, which they recognize where these operators are basically being represented. So just a short overview of that particular issue, and if I can request the RSR also to comment specifically on the Railway Police and the Transportation Board. Chairperson, with regard to the dangerous goods, I think I will also leave that for more technical explanation. On the 5 month period, and also on the governance issue, a little bit of clarity maybe, the CEO is not anything different or an additional structure to that of the board or the Railway Safety Regulator. It's basically, according to the PFMA, the CEO is the accounting officer, and the board will be also the accounting authority. And similarly, the minister will be the executive authority of that particular entity. So when we are talking about the annual report, we are talking about the usual way in which we table our annual report to Parliament. The minister will table the annual report of the Railway Safety Regulator, as with all the other entities. And that annual report must, according to the existing PFMA, be submitted to Treasury within 5 months. That is the existing legislation. However, this particular act is not in line. It's talking about 3 months. So that is basically the reason why we are changing it to 5 months, because the PFMA is already regulating for all the entities and the departments for 5 months. Pneumatic tyres also for the RSR to outline, including the non-refundability of application fees. I think that is maybe a policy decision that must be taken, but we must also keep in mind that there is a very particular administration effort that goes with the application, with a lot of issues that must be considered by the Railway Safety Regulator in that process. So if there is not a genuine kind of application made, this is an action that is going to be costing the RSR something. So it's just to that extent that this has been introduced. The appeal within 21 days, I think Advocate Nazambuka must lead us there on how we are going to interpret dates. I know the Interpretation Act also guides Parliament in this regard presently. threats and risks. I think the RSR can also comment on that. When we talk about introducing different regulators, Chair, my take on this would be that we must be clear on the fact that this is an existing regulator. It's been operating for a lengthy period of time already. We are definitely not going to introduce an additional regulator. We are continuing with this existing one, but we would like to give a test so that whenever we go and look at safety from a standard point of view, we would like to give our regulator the kind of capacity and empowerment to really act accordingly. The network operators, as I've indicated, mostly all the strong ones are Transnet and the South African Rail Commuter Corporation. Why? Because they have a lot of capital infrastructure. They are operating quite lengthily across the whole of South Africa. So those network operators we need to regulate. When we talk about the train operators themselves, we are talking also about private operators that may apply, but then they may or may not use the networks of the network operator. So in all these processes, we need to make sure that safety comes first. The investigation of railway occurrences and what that exactly means, Chair, I would also give through to the RSR. Thank you.
Give it a minute.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll take quite a few questions, respond to those few questions, and then I'll hand over to Levin to respond more clearly to some of the technical questions. On the issue of the railway police, the RSR, the Railway Safety Regulator, is actually responsible for this, for safety issues, for safety at railway operations, whilst the railway police is responsible for security issues. It may be one coin with two sides, but one organization is responsible for the safety, the other one is responsible for security issues. And security is a matter that is within another government department. It is the responsibility of the Minister of Safety and Security instead of the Minister of Transport. Now, the RSR has been established by an enabling act that comes from the Department of Transport to deal with safety matters that happen at the railway in the railway environment. And the object of the act, of the principal act here, clearly states out that the reason the RSR was established was to ensure that you promote the use of rail by improving safety in the railway organization. And because the railway operation, the railway industry was not regulated before, it was self-regulated, then it was necessary to establish the Railway Safety Regulator in order to ensure that there's a body, an independent body that plays an oversight role. Now, we have acknowledged also that the Principal Act also acknowledges that there might be some functions that the Railway Safety Regulator would play that would necessitate that it cooperates with other organs of the state to ensure that there isn't duplication or inconsistencies that happen when the regulator discharges its obligation in terms of the Railway Safety Regulator Act. And we enter into cooperative agreements with different state organs to ensure that we work in harmony. And currently we actually have an MOU that we have with the railway police, and we also have forums that different forums that we attend to ensure that we are able to work together to ensure that safety does not affect the absence of safety will obviously affect security in the railway operation, and so will the security. If security is not up to standard, it will affect the safety of the railway operation. So there are those cooperative arrangements that are taking place between security and safety, but the two are actually separate issues. On the issue of dangerous goods, I will leave it to Marvin to respond to that. There was also a question of the application fee that is not refundable. What happens is that operators, in terms of the Principal Act, operators are supposed to apply for a safety permit with the railway safety regulator. The idea here is that you establish a particular relationship with the operators. You are also able to know how many operators are there and who are you regulating. So in order to bring these people into your radar screen to know who exactly are you operating as the regulator, they make an application in the form of submitting the safety management system report, which is the safety management system report is basically a document that outlines how operators are taking care of the safety management of safety issues in their own operations. How do they ensure that they operate safely? Now, the Principal Act is currently saying that the regulator will charge a fee for processing safety permit application or for processing safety applications and issuing the safety permit. Now the proposed amendment here says that we will charge a fee including the application of a safety permit. Now, the idea here is that once we receive that application, it does not necessarily mean that that application will be granted. The regulator may deny, may not grant a permit. Now, but that does not necessarily mean that the regulator did not perform did not work on that application. So we receive this application. This application comes with an application fee. Then it will be on the strength of this application fee and the application that the regulator then will start assessing the application. And once the application meets all the requirements, it will then another fee will be charged at a later stage. But now, if the application is not granted, the RSR would have still worked on the application, and therefore that money will go towards the efforts that the RSR spent in assessing the application. The issue of you made an example of the operator forfeiting the application fee because of a typo. That's basically not the intention. The intention is that there are certain requirements that are set that the safety management system report has to meet. There are processes. There's a regulatory. The RSR has also been established to develop the regulatory regime, to come up with the regulatory framework, so that both the operators and the regulator can know what standards need to be complied with, and all that. Now, what usually happens is that the operator will, there are certain requirements in terms of certain standards that have been developed by the RSR together with the SABS to say the operator needs to comply with these requirements for safety purposes. Now, if the operator complies with those, obviously an application will be granted. If he doesn't, so there are certain efforts, obviously, of communicating with the operator to say this information is lacking, please submit this information for us to be able to process your application. Now, it will not be the application will not necessarily be refused on the basis that there has been some typo or that kind of work. It will be based on whether or not we believe that the operator is able to take care of his risk factors, to manage his risk factors in his environment. Now, and then the issue, there was an issue of the appeal within the appeal period within the 21 days and all that. Like the Procurator said, that the Interpretation Act will obviously kick in to say how do you calculate the days, and it's usually inclusion of the first day and exclusion of the last day, and it also excludes the public holidays and all that. So we are guided, obviously, by what the Interpretation Act says in that regard. And also what I need to point out on that is that it's not only about 21 days for the submission for the lodging of the appeal. You just have to notify the RSR within 21 days that you have the intention to lodge an appeal, and a certain there's an additional time period that you are given for you to lodge the actual appeal and the reason for that appeal. can I just leave all other questions to my friend to respond to?
Thank you, Chair, members. Just for clarity, when we talk about safety in the railway environment, we're talking about operational safety. We're talking about things like derailments, collisions, level crossing accidents. Those are things that relate to operational safety. We're not talking about occupational safety per se, which is now about the human being. Like I just cut my fingers off. It's not about that. It's about the safety of railway operations. And what Bibi said is correct. There's a relationship between operational safety and security, because if you have an unsafe commuter service because people have got doors open or people now hang outside trains, that's where we have this relationship between the police and ourselves to manage that. Our responsibility is to see that there are processes in place to manage that and to reduce them. That's our fundamental function. I'm going to hop around a bit because I think some of the things are pertinent. I think, Rev, you said, who is the RSR? Maybe you were thinking about the SAR, the old railway, South African Railways. I think Mr. Watson clarified that RSR was that railway safety regulator. The fact that it's true that many of the branch lines are no longer operational is a fact. But there is a policy, which I can't talk about, it's now the government, the department, to resurrect branch lines, to get them going again. And anybody from the Eastern Cape here would know that, in fact, the Kai line has been opened. It's a provincial intervention. The province is actually running that, running it in such as in control of it. It's been run by operators, but there's a first provincial line that's been reopened that was closed completely. And there's closed processes in place to look at other branch lines. So that's where the province's interest comes in, and that's why I think it's a Section 76 legislation, because it has a direct impact on provinces. The fact that many of you have not had direct relationship with the regulator is true. We don't have a presence in the provinces other than here in Cape Town and Johannesburg. It's a question of funding and question of just creating capacity around the country where we find there's a concentration of operators that we need to have a presence in different provinces. At the moment, for the reasons of funding and capacity, we have limited just to Johannesburg and to here. And so the office down here looks up Northern Cape, I think as far as Kimberley, and then goes up in the Eastern Cape as well, and of course here. So that's now just to give an indication of how we see it evolving. Getting to some specific issues, dangerous goods. The Act, as it currently reads, says that we are the competent authority for the transportation of dangerous goods. We found that confusing, so we're proposing that we amend that, and the amendment, as is illustrated there, is we will do the same things that we do for all other types of transportation of freight or passengers, the capacity to do audits, inspections, investigations. But what we're proposing, in addition to that, is if you have an incident involving dangerous goods, to have the capacity to go to the process before the rail leg to see was the stuff correctly loaded, was it correctly packaged, and so on. Because that could have been the cause of the accident. And so we're not limiting, currently the Act limits you to look at the railway leg. When it comes to dangerous goods, we want to move a step back. I hope that kind of, dangerous goods, somebody wants to know what dangerous goods are. Dangerous goods, the same things that you talk about on rail or road, the same thing applies on rail. They're just bigger volumes moved. A dangerous goods is defined by the United Nations, and would be referenced in the old Act, or the current Act of 10228, or 0228, it's now 10228, and that's why one of the reasons why we want to take away reference to a particular number, because numbers change. We just want to talk about the definition of dangerous goods as covered, and the Minister will now, in terms of the proposal, announce to operators any changes, any new standards that have come out, so all operators know what the latest standards are that they need to apply to. They always have to just kind of dream or think that they understand what's applicable. We require the Minister in a gazette to announce to all operators what the latest standards are. the question of pneumatic tires. Just a bit of technicality. In this country, the gauge, that's the difference between the rails. We have rails, that the trains that run from 600 millimeters, or actually 610, 2 feet in the old language, up to 3'6" gauge. That's the gauge between the rails. And now with the Hart train, it's now standard gauge, 4'8.5". But by only using gauge as a measure means that if you bring a monorail in, then they could say that that's not covered by our legislation. In France, where I've been, they've got trains that run on rubber tires, but within a guide. So we want to be able to say that if somebody decides to bring a rubber-wheeled train within a guide, it's still with rail guides, but it's got rubber wheels as well, it's very quiet, we fall under our act as well. So that's the reason why we're proposing monorails, magnetic levitation, that's a system of propulsion, it's magnetic levitation, it's not electricity, it's magnets, and there's test trains in Germany that are doing this, running very fast. But again, it's not on a 3'6" gauge, it runs on a single concrete thing with a metal strip on top. So the whole purpose was that we didn't want to sound people to be clever and to say, it's only where the wheels are so far apart covered by our act, we try to cover all other things as well, and hence an explanation for magnetic levitation, fixed rail, trams, and so on. Threats and risks. It becomes a little bit technical to explain what a threat and what a risk is, but if I may, through your chair, just to give a simple example, and it's not a railway example. I quote it wherever I go. The hole in the ground of the road is a threat. If you don't go past it, it doesn't worry you, but it's still there, it's a hole in the ground. If you go past it every day, the chance of you falling in there gets bigger. And it's a question now, so risks, or you go and look at the threat and you say, how often are you likely to fall in the hole? And if you do fall in the hole, what is likely to happen to you? Break your neck, or break a leg or something. So that's the difference between a threat. A threat is a situation that is unsafe. A risk is when you go up and say, well, what is the consequences of that threat? That's just a technicality, I think. A railway occurrence, we decided when we did the original bill to combine the concept of accident and incident and call it an occurrence. An accident is what you and I would always understand an accident, when you have a collision or a derailment or something like that. An incident is when that doesn't, when the event doesn't land up in an accident. So let me give you an example. If a train goes past a signal, but it doesn't crash into anything else, we call that an incident. But if it now runs into another train and crashes into it, you have a collision, that's what we call an accident. And those two things together are called occurrences. And operators need to manage occurrences, because an incident can change into an occurrence by a different set of circumstances. So that's the technical explanation of what an occurrence means. Network operators, just for information, we have about 255 permits issued in this country at the moment. 255. A network operator is anybody that's now in control of some fixed infrastructure and manages the traffic that runs on it. It includes all the mine tracks in the country on the surface, not underground mines. All surface track and mines are covered by our legislation. Sidings, from the smallest siding to the largest siding, Mittal Steel, Kumba mines, all the mining houses, all those run on trains that are covered by our act, and every one of them needs a permit. So we've issued, as I said, about 255 permits, in the process of reissuing permits currently. I think a network operator, I think that the doctors explained what a network operator is. It's the physical side of things, whereas a train operator is the thing that runs on top. It could be the same person or it could be different persons. And let me give you an example. Both Transnet Freight Rail and the Rail Commuter Corporation, which will change its name in terms of the proposed bill, I think, which you discussed this morning or sometime, they are both network, train, and station. We mustn't forget station. Station is also an important part because that's the interface between the train and where the people get on and off. So we have network operators, train operators, and station operators. Rofos Rail, some of you might have heard of Rofos Rail, which is a luxury train. It runs up through Africa as well. It is not a train operator except when it's running right in Pretoria itself, because it has its own locos on the front. But when Transnet puts its locos on front, Transnet becomes the train operator of Rofos's train. And there needs to be processes in place to manage that relationship between Rofos Rail and Transnet Freight Rail. And that's now all covered in the operator safety management system. Different types of permit. Currently, we've identified that a person that wants to run a construction train, Gautrain, for example, who's from Gauteng here? Gautrain is about to start running some construction trains to run material. They cannot run it without a permit. So we granted them a construction permit. If you now are going to, when they start testing and commissioning that train, they're going to have a testing and commissioning permit, a different type of permit from the operational permit. So there are different risks, there are different kind of requirements to be fulfilled. And the proposed amendment makes provision for these different types. There's no doubt in people's minds that we can have different kinds of permits. There will be different prices for those different permits, different charges, I should say. But we do have different types of permits. I think I might have covered everything. I'm not sure if I've missed something, Chair.
Okay. No, thank you very much for the responses. I think one must raise an issue here. You see, I also found myself in almost a similar situation with the honourable members, in that I was trying to make sense, and as far as why is this piece of legislation tagged as Section 76, and that comes as a result of my understanding of rail and rail operations being a national competence, being the responsibility of the national minister. And if you look at the Principal Act, the way it speaks about the regulator, it speaks of the regulator as a national institution. And I couldn't make sense also but if I have to go to my province, how do I say to my province these are the implications of the piece of legislation that we're talking about? Because you see, not unless there are serious political issues that led to the amendment, and we are not being told of. And if there are, I would appeal to the department to tell us what those political implications or political processes that led to the amendment. If there is a sense of devolving rail responsibilities from the national minister to provinces or whatsoever. And I must say, the information you gave in relation to the operators, because I was also thinking to myself, but the only two operators I know of, it's Stark and Fasner. Now, there's an example of the Eastern Cape. Hence, I'm looking at the political reasoning behind this. Is it that provinces are going to be encouraged to develop their own operators to operate certain lines? Or has there been a deliberate act on the part of provinces? What then happens to the municipalities if it does happen, where your metros would also come up and want to operate certain lines and all those sorts of things? What are the implications in as far as that particular area is concerned? You spoke of the question of safety, but you're taking away the occupational the occupational land. But if you look at the Principal Act, it acknowledges under its preamble the question, the relationship between occupational health and safety with security, which I think it's an area also that we need to clarify. You further speaks of you further speak of 255 permits. I was a bit taken aback on these permits that you're speaking of, precisely because if you look at the Principal Act Chapter 2 on the application of the Act, it says the Act does not apply to a railway in a mine which is underground and to which the provisions of the Minerals Act govern. Now, the way you explained the 255 permits, you spoke of your mining underground rails and so forth. Maybe I didn't understand you. Maybe you just have to give me some clarity on that, because it lists a whole range of areas which the Act does not necessarily apply. Perhaps it will also be important for you to do that. The other issue relates to the doctor spoke about the alignment of the PFMA norms and standards, or standards, if I may put it that way. But still, I can't see any amendment from the presentation and even the amendment bill that speaks to the fact that the regulator must account to Parliament, because once you kick in the PFMA, therefore you are saying public money is going to be used to run this particular entity, and once there is that sense of money from the public purse, it means therefore this institution must also account to Parliament, because from the Principal Act it only speaks about accountability in as far as to the minister is concerned, but it doesn't take into account that and only speaks of the Parliament in as far as the minister I heard it I just lost the section the inconsistency here, that you would find that the board of the regulator, or the regulator, only accounting to the minister, but we don't get a sense of even the role of Parliament in as far as the appointment of that board is concerned. It's all about the minister appointing the board, but we don't say the board that is going to receive money from fiscal. This is the responsibility of public representatives over that particular board in the process of its appointment and the level of accountability. So I think it is important that maybe if you can get some form of clarity on the issues. And I was just thinking, you know, being from the Northern Cape, how is this thing going to benefit me? Is it going to also assist in the revival of the DR, Noord Lane, and so forth, you know, to kickstart the economic activity of that particular block region in the province? If this bill can say, no, we're going to do exactly that, I'll be the first one to lobby other provinces for that option.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I'm supposed to rejoice about this new development from Eastern Cape, but even myself was having a question mark. You know, unfortunately, as Parliament, we don't know the tools that are used by our departments through their legal departments to decide on a bill to be 75 or 76. Maybe a constitution, it does put that in. I'm sitting here knowing that I'm waiting for the day that the land bill must come here in the transport, in the public works, whatever, as section 75. Today this bill is here, it's 76. The question that we have just raised, you know, this railway line that is just recently opened from Eastern Cape between your East London and the Tamutato of Butterworth. This committee, it must remember that we once debated, and I was asking the question, we've been told that that railway line has been budgeted, but there were problems about that budget in a province. When we ask a Department of Transport, they were saying that, you know what, there was a feasibility study which was wrong. So I'm looking at 75 and 76. There are so many railway lines in that Eastern Cape, Matatiel, Oxted, Cedarville. So I'm looking at, is it really a competent of provinces, as you are saying, and the implication of finance and the budget, that can they afford to have such a budget of a national, I can say that I'm seeing as a national whatever, I don't know what can I say. So I'm saying I'm having a problem, maybe if they can clarify a little bit, department, what measures do you take when you're taking a decision that the bill must be 75 or 76? Now, I can benefit as Eastern Cape that this bill is 76, but I'm raising these things. When are we going to open other lines? Is it not because of the limited budget from the provinces that they cannot just open, just because maybe there's a cry of wanting to open this railway station, and we are saying that you can support it if we are saying that they can open even your, I cannot say, and that's not about to fund the railway lines. So as politicians and members of this parliament, sometimes when we are coming here, you must try to give us a lesson. I do appreciate that, but if you did still remember, I posed a question to my MEC, to my minister in a committee, why this railway station not yet operating? They were having a problem of feasibility study that they were wrong. Really, is it a competence of the provinces or national? I'm not saying that we must reverse whatever. Just sometimes when we're saying this bill wanted to be section 76, we'll be told by the gurus in the departments, no. I'm not saying this one is not supposed to be 76, but more clarity. What is it? And why are other railway stations are still closed? I've mentioned Ngape Makaya Kostavelo, we used, when I was schooling in Mariazela, I used to use the steamer train to go to Ethekwini, to Suke Mariazela. Those railway station are closed. And who's supposed to open? Does the province have that a budget that they can just do that, is it supposed to be a provincial role to open the railway lines? Thank you.
Honorable, what do you want to make a follow-up?
If I can carry on where you left off, we would be correct in when we do the briefing to try and explain that, as you said, the regulator is situated in Cape Town and in Johannesburg. But obviously the regulator in Johannesburg would serve Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest and the Free State. If you are doing the Capes, I don't know, KZN possibly also from Johannesburg. And that the impact on my province is basically only to know what regulations apply in terms of the various operators, be it at the mines, at the sugar mills, forestry stations, etc., to know what is now in operation and what is happening in terms of the law, but that there is no direct impact. Am I correct? Unless the province would wish to become involved in creating an operator or sponsoring an operator. If I'm correct, that's the only impact. That's number one. Number two, when I was a child, there was a narrow gauge running in KZN, those days from the town, from Kelso to Donnybrook. And that was, if I remember correctly, 2 feet, 600. Now, in the bill, you say that you now allow the regulator to also approve gauges smaller than 600. Have I got it wrong? Is it bigger? All right, I read it to be smaller, but in any case, does that come into the rail gauge of the pneumatic single track tire? Is that what you're actually? You're not trying to regulate the small trains running at the showgrounds for the kids to climb on. So if you could maybe just explain those 2 points to me.
Bamzi, you do have a follow-up.
Thank you, Chairperson. The follow-up actually relies on provinces. Probably you might have not seen quite of these things happening. It's the first time I hear of the right name of the Eastern Cape. But when one looks at the consultation made to other people who probably or have interest here, I look at the Ingwe collieries. Those are the coal mines, I should believe. That I understand, probably. But the city of Tshwane, if I had to explain to people in the public hearing, you know, I might have a problem. Then, more so, Mkhaka municipality in Kroonstad. Now, when you say people, this consultation was done widely, they'll never be able to also, because people would have seen this now. What is it in Mkhaka municipality in Kroonstad? They can understand in Welkom there are mines, but I don't see no mines in the West name in Kroonstad. There's a town that I frequently pass now and again. But probably if we take it further, as you have said, that you have been in Canada, I have been West name in Holland, where you have actually train on the street, you know, which is the commuter train that transport people in the street like anybody else. Yeah. No, it's not even a tramp. Tramp is where you see the lines that the white snake, that we did have in Johannesburg. That one is a train itself. It moves in the industry. That could probably be regulated by the municipalities, so that I understand, but in some of our towns it hasn't come. You know, are we foreseeing that in the future that we might be having that? And if that be the case, you know the problem we have with taxi industries. Once there's a route that now takes their line, Sakale Supa. I don't see them that they've been consulted yet, because we are now talking of people who will be having permits, and they'll be moving in and down, and then it affects their business, it affects their permits.
Now, if they are not consulted, well, there's a problem to convince them that, hey, this is the bill that this would be cheaper for the people. Because those trains move right in the Western town. It's not like a railway line that moves right outside. It's right in town. You can just get off there to check out. You can get off there. It is within the road. Now, consultation, I don't think it's been done widely. If we, our intention is to have those trains also, like the one that I mentioned in the Western name in Holland. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much, Doctor.
Okay, thank you. Maybe I must start off by explaining just the role of any regulator. This particular entity, like any other regulator, will not be involved in policy making, will not be involved in operational activities, and is actually not involved in any railways per se in the country. I think that must be clear. We have entities for that. We have Transnet, we have SRCC, and I've heard now how many 255 other operators that deal with that, apart from even the department, provincially and nationally, dealing with rail. So those are the accountabilities that exist. The RSR only serves for purposes of safety in the operations of those operators. In other words, they set standards of safety. You must have the following, a closed window, X, Y, Z. That's why we have the technicality outlined here. Those regulators, with their trains, with the tracks, everything that composes railway sector, have certain safety standards. And those safety standards are basically formulated by the regulator. They don't implement. They must now just oversee that all these other operators that we actually are also talking about must comply. And in order to enforce that compliance, we are introducing these penalties so that we can get an entity with teeth. Just in a nutshell, I think that must be clear. To answer your particular question with regard to policy decisions impacting, I'm not informed of any particular political policy decisions relating to this specific act. But what I can say is that since 2002, the RSR has been operating as is. We are not creating a new entity today. We are saying we are still within the ambit of the existing act. All that we are doing now is to just give a little bit of more clarity to certain functions, and to give a little bit more enforcement to the RSR to actually implement its existing functions properly. With regard to the accounting to Parliament, of course very important, but I would love to give the certainty to the NCRP today that this entity is no different from any other public entity. It is going to account to Parliament. It does account to Parliament. Even this particular month, you will see the tabling of the annual report of the entity to Parliament. It was not that bad audit report either. So I believe that I don't want to preempt anything, but you will experience that. So regarding accounting, very important. The relationship with the minister is that of an executive, and as the responsible official to sign the regulations and to approve those appeal issues that we talked about. So that is the normal executive function, nothing impacting on accounting outside the public sector accounting principles. With regard to the impact on the provinces, I think we've clarified that to a large extent. Maybe my colleagues can add to that. But I think the most important thing is, and I would like to commend the committee to even raise those matters mentioned here to the department, because I think we've touched on challenges within rail as such in the country, which may be surfaced now because we are dealing with a bill relating to rail. But we would like as a department to address those challenges in cooperation or from a policy perspective with the assistance of the provinces. But I would like in the same press like to confirm that the Railway Safety Regulator will be approachable to the provinces, although they have only two offices. They have a well-organized administrative function, and they are approachable. If there are any clarity to be provided to potential operators within the provinces, they have a system of advice, and they will definitely support any endeavor. Thank you.
Follow up. There are a couple of technical questions, I think. Just to clarify, I said surface track on mines, Chair. We're not involved with anything underground. It's only the surface track. Any track on the surface on mines. All of that stuff, yes, they have a, Kumba has a permit. They have a relationship with Transnet, and that's all covered in their safety management system. So,
just for purpose of clarity, which will I think assist members as well, because you may find that in our different provinces we might have practical and empirical examples that we can speak to. I don't know if you have them now, but if you can just enlist them and distribute that to members. Say, for instance, in Gauteng, we speak about the following things. Okay, the Honorable Watson was able to speak about certain examples in Mpumalanga. I'm making specific references in the Northern Cape, Sishen, and your Daniel Scale areas and so forth, where iron ore is being mined and so forth. That can, I think, assist as well. Members, as they go brief their legislatures in understanding exactly what we're dealing with here.
The direct answer is I don't have that information here.
You don't have
it? No, I don't have it. That we can obviously make that available, and that we can arrange. The question of gauge, in the current Act, it just refers to anything with a gauge bigger than 600 millimeters. But if you're running on a monorail, there is no gauge issue because it's running on a concrete slab. So we are saying that in addition to that, if you're running on a monorail or magnetic levitation or any other form of propulsion, but you can't measure the wheels, the distance between the wheels, that also is covered by our Act. But we're not going to, and we exclude particularly amusement parks. We don't want to get involved with toy trains. That's not our function. Any incident that happened there would fall under the Occupational Health and Safety Act. I think that the doctors have already addressed the issue of policy. We're not policy makers. We're here to oversee safety. And that's all. If the provinces are going to run trains, that's a policy issue that's outside of our ambit. Our interest is to make sure that they would run safely. We make sure that any operator has a safety permit. So that would be our function. We would not be in the position to say, you're going to this branch line is opening or that branch up. That's a policy decision that comes from the department.
Chairperson, you correctly pointed out on the issue of occupational health and safety that the preamble of the principal act actually acknowledges that there's a relationship between safety and occupational health and safety. And there is a section, there's a provision in the amendment bill actually that says that the railway safety regulator will also play an oversight role on occupational health and safety matters that have an impact or a potential impact on the safety of railway operations. So it has been amplified now in the Amendment Act that what kind of a role is the RSR, the railway safety regulator, going to be playing?
No, thank you very much, honorable members and the department or the regulator for the briefing. But I must say, you see, I raised this thing deliberately of policy direction or changes and so forth, because there are so many interesting developments in our country that whenever there appears to be a policy shift, you will see with a particular amendment to a piece of legislation. And if you are unable to preempt the direction, that the country would be moving towards, you would not be able to understand the dynamics as they play themselves out. So we wanted to check with you whether if we could not take advantage of getting some information that we might not be privy to in anticipating what the department wants to do in relation to our rail revolution in the country. So we thought we'll be able to get something out of you, but you are steadfast, you know. you just don't want to release that information. But it's fine. I mean, we understand. As a regulator, it is your responsibility to do that. At the moment, of course, I mean, I must just explain. Obviously, it's the Section 76 bill. I don't think all provinces will be giving briefings tomorrow. No, on Thursday and Friday. There are other provinces scheduled to meet next week. Meaning, therefore, we are going to give our province at least the period of September, to exercise their participatory democratic right of calling for public hearings and so forth. Meaning, therefore, we'll only be able to deal with negotiating mandates probably after the 25th.
When are we going to do the briefing? I've just been looking at the program. I don't know if we want to wait for the department signing on it, but we need to discuss it.
And I'm trying to preempt some of the things that we might be experiencing, because it's also a question of the state of readiness of our provinces. We are in a very difficult period at the moment. Some legislatures, as we speak, have already are almost not functioning. Political parties are on the ground now, hitting the ground running. On a principle point, let's just agree that for the period of September, we hope to have completed the briefings, public hearings, and immediately after the 25th, we'll then deal with negotiating mandates. Final mandates and then hope to pass the bill in October before Parliament dries officially. Because we also need to look at the issues before us on the basis of priority and what is quite urgent to our people. We hope that that in the information we requested, you know, of specific examples in our respective provinces, if that information can reach the committee secretary, at least before the end of this week, it will be. I hope it's just by a press of a button that information will start kicking out, because it's just to look at all the people that we have allocated permits to, which provinces are they in, and then print that information and give it to us. That will assist members as well. But we would do what is required of us in terms of presenting these pieces of legislation. The fortunate thing, Honorable Wati, tomorrow we'll be dealing with the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill and the National Land Transport Bill. There's, both of them are Section 76. So it means, therefore, we'll be dealing with three transport Section 76 bills. Now, in the manner in which we'll have then to plan our work must be in such a way that by the time we give a briefing, we will then have to deal with all the bills before the committee that relates to transport, which will make our work much more easy. Or you thought maybe as a committee we need to? Okay, no, that's fine then. If that is the spirit of the meeting, then
But we need to discuss it. I don't know if you want to.
Yeah, well, I was raising it for the department also to have a benefit of the kind of challenges that you are faced with.
The problem that I have is that this week it's too late to arrange anything. Next week we're away on oversight. A whole lot of us. The week after that is the people's parliament. That takes us to the 22nd of, and that whole week of the 22nd is sitting here. It's the only week of sitting. We can't, and the only week where there's party conferences. We can't go into briefings. I don't know how we're going to do briefings before the week. And then, according to the program, the second term ends on Friday the 24th. And the program that I saw that you adopted last week goes into the constituency period. When there's going to be nobody, I can tell you now. So we need to look at that program. I don't know when we're going to do the briefings and when we're going to get them to do public hearings and final mandates. I spoke to my colleagues in the province and I said, no, right? The guy's closing for the constituency period. As the framework states.
No, I want to confirm what the Honourable Watson is saying, but let's not discuss further. The department will hear from your office, but it's correct that they must be aware. For instance, in my province, I cannot go with 3 bills in a day, 76 bills. They've said we've been trying to do in these 2 months. So they were saying it's too much for them. We don't want to do justice. Some bills are bills that they need the whole day or about 4 hours. They do have their other programs of their legislatures. So I'm saying, let's not go deeper just because provinces has been notified what is going on in this national parliament. They are aware that there are 31 bills that were just told about last week. Some of those bills are still in the NA. With us, we still want more from other departments which we are serving on. So, according to my understanding, the province was going to be notified. That's why I'm saying, let's take these briefings, and we don't want to say when are we going to brief, just because, as Honorable Watson said, it's a reality. But your office will communicate with the provinces.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Member, for raising this thing. I think you would appreciate, the department would appreciate the kind of challenge that we are faced with. Of course, like you say, if these matters have been brought to the attention of the provincial legislature, let's hope that something may come up where serious consideration will then be given to the challenges that we are faced with. For now, let's hope that the programming which Honorable Wati, Honorable Zizi, I think next week you are going to have a meeting. And the Honorable Zulani is also part of the programming meeting. So.
Yes, but then you want to be engaged in
it? No. Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to hit the ground running. If it means therefore that the other foot soldiers must run that way, the others must run that way. As now your chance.
I personally feel it's really hurting the members.
with so many deals, we're talking, we're having this deal today, which is a section 76. We have them two deals tomorrow, which is a section 76. And the same, we're going one over five next week. For me, it's
Can I make a suggestion that if there are any other issues outside the briefing that we had received today, can we excuse the department so that we then engage with some of the issues that the honourable members are raising? Thank you very much. We hope to interact more in the future. Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.